Edutainment Learning is powered by Academica Virtual Education and Collegia TV. For more information, visit www.edutainmentlearning.com.
My name is Brian Branco. I'm 56 years old. I live in New Jersey, Northern New Jersey. I do computer accounting system work for a living.
Can you tell us about your experience, your recollection, where you were on September 11th, 2001?
Sure. So September 11, 2001 was a clear blue sunny day, not a cloud in the sky. You could see for miles and miles and miles. Air traffic control is closed, severe clear. My first day back early into the city, into work, I was a consultant for Thompson Financial Baseline, which means I didn't work there every day. I was there probably about 3 or 4 days a week. So it was my first day back early. The week before, Bob was kind of kidding me. He's like, when are you going to come back in early? He was an early person. He was at his desk 7:30, 7:45 in the morning. The company had software for the stock market. So out of the 220 employees or so, most people weren't in. So my first day back early. So it was about 8:45 and I was at my desk. My view was Southeast view, Brooklyn Bridge, Manhattan Bridge, that type of stuff. And out my window, sitting at my desk, I felt a little vibration. Kind of like the air conditioner kicking on, but not really. Nothing really I would think about out of the ordinary. A couple minutes later, I saw papers flying at my window. And at that height, we were up, I was on the 78th floor of the South Tower. So at that height, you're not supposed to see much. We were above the police helicopters, the blimps, the Cessnas. You know, there was one time it rained on the ground and we had sun all day long. We were above the clouds. Interesting place to work. So like I said, you're not supposed to see much at that height. So I was on a sky lobby. So you take an elevator from the first floor right up to my floor. So I went out to the sky lobby and somebody said Tower 1 got hit by a plane. I thought a little Cessna. I thought it was a little two-seater plane, that lower Manhattan is windy. I figured he was playing around by the buildings. He got pushed by the wind into the buildings. Exactly what I thought. I went back. I called my wife real quick. We had a quick conversation. Kind of a funny story. I bought a sports car in that summertime. And the weekend before, I wouldn't let her drive it. So we were fighting all weekend. And this was a Tuesday. So I went to work on Tuesday morning. I kissed her goodbye. And she wipes the kiss off my face. Her face goes, go to work. So I called her at work. And I said, listen, something happened in Tower 1. It got hit by a plane or something. And try to lighten the mood up. She goes, what, the moron didn't see the building? And I said, I can't talk to you now. And she goes, whatever, and hangs up on me. And we don't do that anymore. We learned a very valuable lesson that day. So I went out to the Sky Lobby and I was meeting with Steven and he said to me, I forgot something in my office. I said to him, all right, I'll see you downstairs. I went straight to the elevators. He went right to his office. On the Sky Lobby, if you worked on 80, for instance, on the 80th floor, you have to take an elevator to 78, like a local elevator, and then express elevator down to one, down to the ground floor. So out the Sky Lobby, it was really kind of getting busy with people kind of trying to leave. So I don't know if these women, there was a 1993 attack on the World Trade Center. It was a truck bomb planted in the basement. So I don't know if these women I met were there in 93 or not, but they had their arms locked. There was like five or six women, and they had their arms like tight. And I got some memory loss up there. I remember, I don't know if I got pushed on the elevator with them or dragged on the elevator. I don't remember. The elevators were big. They held 50 or 60 people. And they went down, they went 800 feet in the air or so, more than that, in probably about a minute. So they went down very, very fast, like they always did. And I remember being in them. And as they, like with anything, as it gets down to the bottom, it's got to slow down to stop. And I remember people in the elevator screaming, no, it's going back up. It's going back up. And I'm like, no, it does this every day. It goes down very, very fast. And then it's got to slow down to stop. Got down at the bottom. The doors open up and my exit was Liberty Street is the one entrance on one side of the building. All the doors, revolving doors were closed. Looked like a war zone outside. So you couldn't go out those doors to get outside. First level of the World Trade Center was a shopping mall and building access where the trains were. You go down to the train, stuff like that. So building security made everybody go into the shopping mall. I remember being in the shopping mall and the police yelling, get out of the building, get out of the building. And I'm like, but building security is putting everybody in here. It was like, no, it was complete chaos. There's no rhyme or reason to anything. I remember walking through the shopping mall and seeing people, you know, running and walking and everything. I ended up walking through the entire mall. I exited on the opposite side of the mall. So I was on the northeast corner. I ended up exiting the building. I was a block away. I ended up, had to figure out where I was, because when I went to work, either I took the ferry over from New Jersey or I drove in. So I didn't know the area at all. I didn't go out at all because the company I worked for bought lunch every day. So I never even saw the plaza outside. I didn't do anything. I went to work and I left. So I kind of had to figure out when I was. So I started walking up Church Street, which is a main street down there. And I got up to the corner of Barclay Street and I turned and I'm like, I saw a building down. I'm like, oh, I can go down there, get to my car because the ferry is down there. That's how it came in there when I took the ferry over. And I'll go home and I'll call Bob and say, I'm coming back tomorrow. And as soon as I turned that corner to walk down Barclay Street, I felt the second plane come in. I never saw it. I was too close. I felt it on the ground, 800 feet or so down on the ground. I felt it. I felt the pressure from it. I felt the heat from it. If you've ever seen one of the movies, like the Terminator movies or something, like the buildings like kind of ripple, it's like a sound wave. I saw that building ripple. The building didn't fall, but I saw it. It seemed to me like it rippled. Everybody ran into 100 Church Street as an entrance on the corner there and ended up going through the lobby of that building and going back and ended up on Church Street. So I was on the corner. I went down Barclay Street, ended up back on Church Street, walking through the lobby of that building. Ended up walking north. I don't know where I was. I ended up just getting away from the buildings. I remember turning around at one point and looking at the buildings and saying, you know, how did the fire jump from one building to the other? Because I didn't know there was a second plane. I don't even know at that point if I knew it was a first plane. I couldn't even tell you what I knew at that point. Ended up walking up to Midtown Manhattan. As I was walking, it was probably about, I don't know, 8-10 miles, maybe at least up there. I ended up walking all the way up there. As I was walking, I heard the Pentagon got hit, the Capitol got hit, the White House got hit. You know, you didn't know what to believe or who said what. Ended up going up there. There's another big transit center up there, Penn Station. There's no trains out of the city, nothing, no mass transit out of the city. You couldn't walk through a tunnel. People walking over bridges to Brooklyn Bridge, Manhattan Bridge. You walk over the bridges. I need to go the opposite way. I would go through the Lincoln Tunnel, Holland Tunnel. The tunnels were closed. The only bridge for me is George Washington Bridge. It was probably up about another 15 miles up. But there were boats. There were boats that started helping. And there's a documentary about it. Tom Hanks, the actor, did a documentary about it. He narrated about called Boat Lift, I believe. It's about the biggest water rescue ever done in the world. You had a 4-seater boat and you came over, you took 3 people with a life jacket and you brought them to New Jersey. I got lucky. I ended up going up to Midtown Manhattan, New York Water, but they're small boats. They were called about 100 people each. I never saw the end of the line. Somebody said the line stretched for 20 city blocks of people waiting for boats that hold 200 people each, maybe. I got lucky. I got the Circle Line boats. They're big tour boats, tourist boats that go around Manhattan. They started donating boats. I got 3rd boat to New Jersey. I ended up walking both through New Jersey, around the Lincoln Tunnel. It was a big hill. It's a big winding road that comes in. I walked around that. My wife picked me up probably about 3 or 4 miles from my house. I was in my house, I guess, by about 2:30 in the afternoon. The first thing she said to me when she picked me up, or one of the first things she said, was, how come you're not covered in white dust? And I said, what are you talking about? She goes, the buildings fell. I said, you're out of your mind. Not in those so much words, but I said, you're out of your mind that the buildings fell. She goes, the buildings fell. I said, I don't believe you. How could the buildings fall? I don't believe you. We got home. We watched it on TV. I watched it probably about four or five times. I said to her, turn the TV off. I can't watch my friends die. And we turned it off and we didn't watch anything for a week because everything here for months was coverage of that. I know in other areas of the United States, it disappeared in a couple of week or so. Here it was nonstop. You know, it was December, it was January. It was, I remember news reports at night saying the cleanup took 8.5 months. The cleanup was done May 30th, 2002. I remember January and February hearing the weather reports, it's going to snow today, so the cleanup at Ground Zero will be delayed. It's going to be 30 degrees today, and the cleanup at nice, the cleanup at Ground Zero is going to, they're going to work on it today. It was everywhere, you know, no matter what it was everywhere. Like I said, a company had 200 or so people, 220 people. There was four other people with me. Miles, he got out. He didn't know why I was there, and I don't know if he was there. We had trauma counseling the following week, and I said to him, why did you leave? He goes, real easy for me. He goes, I'm from Northern Ireland. I heard a boom and I left. And that's as simple as he put it to me. The other people I was with me on 78 weren't as lucky. I'll go to them in a second. People on 77, I think on the 77th floor, we had both floors, half of 78 and more of 77. I think there was 14 people, 15 people. 14 of them got out. They were all there when the plane hit and we were the impact floors. One lady, Florence, she was on 78 and we had an escalator between the two floors. And she said to the people I was with, you guys need to leave. She went down to her office to get something and the plane hit and she got out. Florence got out, but she was one floor down. That's how, what a difference a floor makes. The other people walked and they walked down the stairs. They walked down 77 flights of stairs. The other people with me, Bob Levine, he was the vice president. I worked for Bob. Bob was a good guy. He always took care of me. Such a nice guy. Like I said, I was a consultant, so I didn't work for him full time. But anything I wanted, we moved in the building. He gave me the desk I wanted. I had the window view. He really did everything. You know, I mean, he was a great guy. When I was leaving, he goes, "Where are you going?" I said, "Bob, I'm going downstairs. See what's going on. I'll be back." He didn't get out. Jill Mallory Campbell was Bob's secretary. Jill didn't get out. She was on the phone with trying to find out what was going on. Her son, Jake, was 10 months old on 9/11. And he crawled that day for the first time, and she never saw him crawl. And the other person was Steven Weinberg. Steven was with me. He went back to his office for something, and he didn't get out. He was on the phone with his wife when the plane hit our floors. All right, so this is a little, because this is what's important to me. There's other pictures, which I didn't need to show you. This is the site before. This is what's there now or will be there. Some of it's not done. This is One World Trade Center. This is completed. Down here is the memorial. Two World Trade Center is not built yet. This is three that's open and four is open. They're both built. This is what the floors look like. My office is a little bit different. We had cubicles. This picture is so old. It's from probably the 1970s or early 1980s when the building's open. There's not one computer on a desk. I just think this is a cool picture to show. One World Trade Center. This is where it becomes important to me. The memorials. This is the memorial. This sits in the original footprints of the buildings. It's a waterfall, infinity waterfall. Basically, you're not tall enough to see the bottom. There's a bottom, but water is a symbol of life. And around the memorial of everybody names who died. These are people I was with. Jill on the left with her son, Jake. In the middle, Ruth was the person. I didn't know Ruth at all. She was with the company for 2 weeks. She was on 77 and she died. And then the other picture, Bob is on the left and Steven's on the right. That was taken July of that year, 2001. We had a little company party, and I think it was on a boat, I believe. And we took some pictures there, and that's what those pictures are from. These are the names on a memorial. So these are my friends' names up here in the corner. They're all together. It's kind of hard to see, but it's beautiful to see at night. The names are kind of uplit. They kind of glow at night. This is a picture of the waterfalls, as you can see down here. And this is the memorial itself. The memorial itself is all lined with trees that come from areas no terrorism throughout the New York, New Jersey area, Pennsylvania, where Flight 93 crashed, and Washington, D.C. from the Pentagon. This is a survivor's tree. It's a very special tree. It's the only tree that looks like this. It blooms in late March, early April. It's called the swamp white oak tree. It was on the plaza, and when the buildings fell, somebody found it in the rubble. They brought it up to a tree farm up in northern New York State, up to the Bronx, and they nursed it back to health. And they replanted it on the memorial before the memorial opened in 2010, December of 2010, by a bunch of dignitaries. A couple of survivors, a good friend of mine, Tom, was involved with planting a tree. And I think that the tree has the best tree doctors in the world, because anything happens to this tree, they come in, it's a tree that is for the survivors, everybody who got out of the buildings. That's what that tree represents. And it's just a beautiful thing to see. This quote is in a museum. This is a wall in the museum. No day shall erase you from the memory of time. It's a quote by Virgil. I have a tattoo of that. My wife does, and my daughter does. Just kind of something to kind of think about. The wall behind you can see those blue panels. Each panel, 2,977 people died on September 11th, and six people from the 1993 bombing. That wall is 2,986 different shades of blue, representing the color of that sky that day, because like I said, when I started, it was a clear blue sunny day, not a cloud in the sky. And that's what those blues represent. Again, it's all about, for me, about the people. There's a room called In Memorandum, a picture of everybody who died. And it's not sad. It's sad, but it's not sad, because it's a celebration of their life. And it took me some time to realize that. But a friend of mine said that to me, and I agree with her. They have kiosks in there, so you can go in and pull somebody's name up, and you can play a story about that person. So Jill's family left her a story about her mother talk, her father talk. Steven, there's a story there for Steven, and there's nothing there for Bob. And when the museum opened up, I was upset that there was nothing there for Bob, and I went to the museum management, who I know, said, can I do something for Bob? And they let me leave something for him. So I did an hour and a half talk, and there's about 45 seconds of a story in there, but there's something there for Bob. They're all very short though, so it's okay. But that's what's important to me. And then the tribute and lights. This is from 10 years ago. This is One World Trade Center, not built yet. Red, white, and blue. And these are the lights, if you've ever seen them. These are the lights that they put up, and they shine up to the sky, and they represent the two buildings, and they're blue lights. And they're just amazing to see online or amazing to see in person. We saw them the other night. Unfortunately, it was raining the other night. But what happens is, when it's clear blue sunny, a clear night, they shoot up to this. You can't see them in. That's how far they go up. On a night with clouds, it's also beautiful because they go up and then they hit the clouds, and like they disperse, like the blue light just kind of disperses. It's actually pretty beautiful to see.
Someone from Miss Ware's class, they wanted to know what did you do in your capacity working at the Trade Center when you were there?
I did accounting system work. So I do a lot of accounting system set up and support. So they were a customer of somebody I knew who were working there, but I was with them. We were in a tower for about 2 years. I was with that company for about 6 years at that point in time. So it's called an ERP system, Enterprise Resource Planning System. It's like an accounting system for companies. So I was designing that and supporting that. And actually, we were in the process of an upgrade for them. And back then, you didn't have the cloud. Nothing was in the cloud. They lost a lot of stuff in their building. And I had the only copy of their accounting system because we were in the process of doing an upgrade. They would have lost that too. But we had a copy of the system, which was 2 weeks old. So that's what I did for them.
So, and you were on the 78th floor, was it?
Yeah.
Okay. One of the kids, they want to know, can you talk about your work a little bit with, you know, volunteering and that being part of your process for healing with the museum and with the memorial?
Sure. It took me a while. There's an old museum called the Tribute Center. It opened by a family member. He was a firefighter. He lost his son, a firefighter. And my wife was involved there, 2006, 2007. And I just couldn't deal with stuff. And she ended up volunteering. You had to have some kind of connection to this museum, a family member, a first survivor, family member survivor, or stuff like that. So I started up going in, and I'm like, okay, maybe I can do this. And I started volunteering there. And what we would do was, because Lower Manhattan, there's nothing down there for many years. So people would come in, basically tourists would come in and they want to see stuff. So with the Tribute Center, we talked to people about the events of the day and including our personal stories. And as I always said to people, and when I was doing these tours, I said, you know, why do you come here? And they kind of look at you like, what do you mean? I'm like, why do you come here? I said, you're paying in New York City, probably at the time, $400 or $500 a night for a hotel room. There's 1,000 fun things to do in here, and you're in the most sad and depressing place you can ever be, because 3,000 people died here. I said, don't get me wrong. I said, thank you for coming here, because you helped me when you come here. So volunteering has helped me tremendously, because it showed me that people still care. And 20 years later, people still care. Then we got involved with the National Museum Open. We were involved with their volunteering. That opened May of 2014, the museum itself. So we ended up volunteering to right before COVID hit, and then we actually stopped for COVID. We haven't been back since COVID started. But it was the same concept. It was, you know, you talk to people who come into the museum. You're in New York. You can go do anything, and you're at a museum, and you should be there. I mean, I think everybody in the world should come to the museum. But you're here, and that makes me feel good, because you want to see, get information, right information, for one, because half the stuff on the internet, you can't believe. So you come into the museum, you want to learn something, you want to meet somebody, and you want to see a beautiful memorial. And to me, the volunteering helps me, to this day, it helps me tremendously. It really, really does.
So we have a question from Miss Ware's class. Had a pretty interesting question, and I'm going to let Miss Ware ask herself. Miss Ware, you should be able to unmute to ask that last question that you'd sent. Was very interesting.
Hello, thank you so much. Thank you for being with us. We want to thank you for your time. So my fourth grade class and I, we read the story about Willis Fagan. He was a volunteer firefighter. And I kind of wanted to ask, growing up in New Jersey, I have my own experiences of September 11th. But in your own experience, did you happen to witness the unification of New Yorkers, the everyday heroes, our firefighters, our police officers, our securities from Port Authority? Can you talk a little bit about the unification and how everybody kind of came together to help the greater good?
Everybody came together, like you said. Everybody, no matter where you were, everybody helped. It didn't matter. You could be walking down the street and somebody needs something, you go over and help them cross the street. Everybody in this area, well, I can tell you in this area, helped everybody. There was no question. There was no judgment. There was no racial thing. I don't want to get into that, but of course, but there's no racial thing. There was no anything like that. If you were a human and you needed help, people helped. There was no questions about anything. I mean, I helped some people. My wife helped some people. It was just amazing to see. And the first responders, I give them all the credit in the world, because I had one talk to our class at the museum, Chief Pfeiffer. And I said to him four times, he lost his brother. He sent his brother into the building. His brother died. I said to him four times, I said, I listened to you talk for an hour. You sent your brother into that building and you went back four times. I said, how do you do what you do? And he ended up talking a little while longer. He goes, I'll answer you. And at the end, he goes, I'm going to answer you. I said, okay. He goes, sorry. He said, I do my job so others can live. And that's as simple as he put it. And that's what the first responders do. So, you know, to me, you always got to respect the first responders, because I left the building. It's not as simple, but I left the building and they went back and they went back and they went back and they went back. And unfortunately, our government said the air was safe to breathe. And for the past 20 years, they've been dying from cancers because they should have had respirators on, but nobody really knew that at the time. So they're still suffering all these years later.
We have a question from Sophia. Sophia, you can unmute to ask whenever you get a second.
Hi, thank you so much for being here. I would just want to ask if right now, after this event, are you scared when you are in a building that this could happen again? Or like if this really impacted your life in general?
I've been up in One World Trade Center several times with friends, bringing them up there to the observation deck. I don't know if I'm afraid to go in a building, but I would never work in a tall building again. I can go in it for a meeting or something, probably. but I would never work in a tall building again, especially down there. I know people who were down there and they're working back in those buildings. I'm like, I don't know how you can do that, because I couldn't. And maybe if I had no choice for a job, I would, but I probably wouldn't. I wouldn't even accept the job. No.
That's unimaginable. We got a question from Eurocell. Eurocell wanted to know, after the event, what was going through your mind when you got home, and what was one of the first things that you did?
What was going through my mind? I couldn't comprehend it. I couldn't comprehend what was happening. And you didn't know what else was going to happen. That was the other thing. You know, you didn't know. I know now all the planes were grounded within an hour, a couple hours, but you know, you didn't know what was going to happen. And being where we are near, you know, I'm 10 miles out of New York City. You know, it's, you know, it was like not knowing what's the next thing that's going to happen. I guess you can kind of say.
So our final question before we let you go, is there any advice that you can give to these kids after going through such an unimaginable kind of experience and surviving it and living these, you know, over 20 years since that tragedy that day, what kind of advice would you have to impart on these kids as they go off in the world?
You guys are young. Okay. You guys need to make the difference. Okay. You guys are the future. I'm done with everything. Not really, but I'm 56 years old. So I fight when I need to fight, but you guys are the ones to make a difference. And you guys, whatever changes you need, you guys got to fight for those changes within your countries, within your cities or states, wherever you are. That's one piece. The second piece of advice is, don't sweat the small stuff, because most things in life are small. And, you know, don't argue with your parents. It's not worth it. Be nice to your friends. Just like after 9/11, take care of your friends. You know, to me, you don't know what tomorrow brings. And it took me a while to say that. And, you know, enjoy today, because you don't know what tomorrow brings. And just go home tonight, give your parents a hug, give them a kiss, tell them you love them. That's all you can do.
Well, we can't thank you enough, Brian, for taking the time to speaking with us again this year. And yep. We're honored every year to have you here.
Definitely.
And just, you mean the world to us. And so before we let you go, I'm going to go ahead and let everyone unmute. And can we all say thank you to Brian before I end the meeting for all?
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.